Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mundo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mundo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mundo!
Oh, stick to my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mundo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mundo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing.
Think stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourselves down.
That's right. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about how corporate power is turning the American dream into the impossible dream for the working person. The show that rattles the left-wing limousine liberals who sit on their high horses while the working class fights their battles for them. And the show that loves to point out how the so-called professional media is selling us down the river by not reporting the news. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Avecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here.
Glad to be here, Joe.
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about this show. But first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
Okay, and I want to thank all my fans listening in at the White Rose Society, my good friend Ben Birch, hosting my archives there. Also, my friends at rantradio.com, tuning in on Mondays and Thursdays. My friends at WNYmedia.net out of upstate New York, and everyone listening in from the blog or from their iPods.
Hey, everybody. Glad to be back. As you know, my wife is in the hospital. She's still in the hospital as I'm recording this. She's getting better slowly but surely. But in deference to my fans, I thought it was necessary to put together another show, and not just for my fans, although that's obviously the main reason I'm doing it, but consider it a bit of occupational therapy. I've been kind of out in la-la land for a while, and this is a good way for me to get back in the groove, so to speak. There's been a lot of things going on, and I wanted to talk about them, but not so much them in specific, but stuff in general. And I had a couple of posts, and you know, I had Phyllis Huster on the show for a couple of times, and Phyllis was a big dealer in the realm of election reform, which is a very, very important issue for me, an extremely important issue. And it's very difficult for me to understand how people don't see this as being as serious an issue as it really is. And it really is. It's a huge thing. I mean, we've had two stolen elections already. In 2000 and 2004. And while it's easy to sit back and say, okay, yeah, you're just whining, and maybe that's true to a certain extent. I mean, there is such a thing as being able to steal one creatively to help your side out if you believe you have a worthy cause. Certainly the Republicans believe they have a worthy cause, although what killing thousands of innocent Iraqis and a couple of thousand U.S. soldiers means being noble or a decent cause is beyond me, but that's their thinking. At any rate, It would seem to me that we would at the very least want to try to work an election system that's fair. You know, yeah, there's been corruption in the past, and we've been wrong in that, even though our ideas have been better and better for the country and better for the world as a whole, for the most part. I think it's very important that we have elections that we can trust. And there's always been some sort of fraud in the American electoral system, and I accept that and I recognize that. And you know, it happens, and there's not a whole lot you can do to stop it. But you can prevent the worst abuses of it. And with the deep old voting machines, with all that stuff going on, it just makes it a lot easier. Now, instead of thousands of people in on a huge conspiracy to defraud voters, to disenfranchise them, and all that stuff, now it only takes a couple of people. And that's just a little bit to tempting. And you know what really bugs me? Hang on a second.
Come here, you.
I had a back scratch. I hate it when I'm trying to do something here, and my back starts itching. So I got to get a back scratcher and scratch it. There you go. It feels good. My wife is usually my back scratcher, but she can't do it right now. So anyway, what was I saying? Yeah, one of the things that I find disturbing is that we're not focusing on this issue on the left as much as we ought to. Now, the other day I started up a minor shitstorm on My Left Wing, which, by the way, is a very good blog, MyLeftWing.com. Started by Mary Scott O'Connor, who was a regular poster on Daily Coast. And I read Daily Coast, but being the community board that it is, it suffers from a lot of the problems that you have with communities. I see it in Democratic Underground, which I'm a member of also. There's a lot of little petty bickering and a lot of little political gaminess and all the usual crapola that you find on the left with people fighting. And I started up a little shitstorm on My Left Wing about polls. It was a post that I had. That I posted on My Left Wing, on the blog, and on Daily Coast in one of my diaries there, in response to a post that Coast had about the polls and how Bush is looking bad, the polls are really in the toilet for him, blah, 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 blah. I say the same shit all the time. And this is what I wrote to him. I said, Marcos, I hate to keep dousing water on your poll parade, but what exactly have we done about election reform that makes anybody confident that they won't just steal another election? I mean, how many times are we going to be told to get over it when the polls show a clear Democratic victory, but the election shows a 51% Republican win? I mean, how long before they decide they'll just get away with giving themselves a supermajority that has more than 60 seats in the Senate and more than a 60% majority in the House of Representatives, and then really tear down the Constitution? You know what? Fuck the polls. Fuck the polls to death. The polls are meaningless. Why can't I get this in people's heads? The polls are meaningless. If the elections are rigged, the polls mean nothing. The polls are as important as the points on whose line is it anyway. Do you understand what I'm saying? Stop bragging about Paul Hackett's 49% in that recent Ohio special election. Let me tell you something. 49% of the vote means 0% of the power. That's the way the system is. There's no second place in politics. Do you understand this concept? People get insulted when I say stuff like that. But you know what? It's the plain friggin' truth. Look, let's take all the energy we're spending going through the polls and looking through them and crowing about how bad things look for Bush, and fix the fucking system. Fix the system. Make the polls meaningless. Then you can talk about the goddamn fucking polls. I elaborated on that post a bit, but that was still the crux of it. Very angry, and I think it's something that we should be angry about. I'm not saying that we should disregard all political talk. I'm not saying that we shouldn't plan for the future. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have an idea of what we want to do when we get back in power. I'm saying if we don't fix the system, we're never going to get back into power. I realize that what I'm saying is not the most eloquent way of saying it, but I've never claimed to be eloquent. And as far as I'm concerned, this is way too important an issue to worry about stepping on a few toes. You know, discussing election misconduct, that's important. But it's only part of a far more important issue. Fix the fucking system. My argument with Marcos isn't with him personally. It's about the fact that after 5 years, we're still not past the talking stage. And talking about these polls while not doing anything substantial about fixing the problems is fucking futile. And worse, showing the numbers builds up our hopes, only to see them crushed on, quote-unquote, election night. Now, I mentioned Hackett. Hackett was in that special election in Ohio they had. I forget the lady who won, the Republican. And that was a fairly heavy Republican district. And she won 51-49, I think it was. Really, really close election. And reality is, probably that election was stolen because there were a lot of goof-ups. And there was apparently a few thousand votes that got tallied for the lady who won at the last minute, you know. Excuse me. Professional radio, ladies and gentlemen. So, you know, it was stolen. And everybody's like, oh, it was wonderful. We got 49%. You know, fuck that. Fuck that. Let me ask you, how many of you out there know a lot about the New Deal, about where it came from, what its origins were, and what happened when they got into power? How many of you out there know that most of the New Deal programs that we take for granted were just expansions of things that had been done before on a smaller scale, mostly in New York City, but elsewhere around the country? The people that FDR placed to run all the different new government programs that he had were already war-hardened political veterans who were experienced players in their fields. Not only did they have the ideas, they had the know-how and the courage to try them out. But that was then, this is now. I don't doubt the sincerity and the ability of anyone out there in the blogosphere or in the left-wing world, but I don't see a whole lot of real accomplishments. What have we really done from the point of view of actual political power? More to the point, what are we doing on any level as far as election reform goes? Yet, I'm sure there are states and counties that are run by overwhelmingly Democratic majorities. Have any of them bothered to implement any of the ideas set forth by one of the numerous election reform groups? Has anyone even pressured them to try? Not one that I'm aware of, which means it either isn't being done or no one's bothering to publicize it. Either way, it means that we're never going to be able to make any real difference in what's going on. You're not going to do anything unless you actually win an election and have power. I don't know. I've said this time and time again. There's no second place in politics. You either win and have power or you lose and have none. Excuse me. Now, I am a member of an election reform group. I belong to a group called Defenders of Democracy. And while I may not be in total agreement with the methods that they use, I do agree wholeheartedly with the principle they support. Make the paper ballot the official ballot of record. Have those ballots counted by hand in full public view at each polling place when the polls close. Establish a clear and public chain of custody for the ballots to prevent tampering. You know, let's find a few test areas and get them to implement this system. Let's go to some areas where there's all Democrats and all progressives, if there are places like that in the country, and I'm sure there are, and get them to implement this. You know, what the Defenders of Democracy does is, I think, really good. They'll go to every local seminar here in Atlanta about elections, and they'll go there with some paper ballots and a ballot box, and they'll hold an election right there, asking people whether they prefer machines or people to count the vote. This demonstrates how simple and effective the system can be. And this would give us a foundation to work on, an example to prove that it can be done on a small scale and therefore on a larger scale. And then when the time comes, these people can take their place in election commissions and stuff like that and get the system set out throughout the whole country. Look, I would have a lot less problem with George W. Bush and his administration and other Republicans if I knew for a fact that they were at least freely elected. There's still other issues. There's gerrymandering. There's the suppression of the vote. There's what's going on in Georgia with this voter ID thing. Excuse me. I'm finding it harder and harder to talk for long periods of time, so I got to get something to drink. I'm just drinking Diet Mountain Dew, by the way. But anyway, I can at least say, okay, well, the country's just gone nuts. If they really, really, you know, if a big enough majority really wanted to vote for Bush. But that's really not the case, is it? That's really not the case. You know, fraud in Ohio, fraud in Florida. And they have every incentive to keep that going. Look, you know, they have every incentive to cheat. They have every incentive to do so. Get it right the first time. No more damn machines. Vote it right the first time. Count it right the first time. Anyone who is against having the most accurate, fraud-free elections we can possibly have, as far as I'm concerned, are really anti-Americans. And, excuse me, almost as much as the lack of action as far as election reform goes, the general reaction that I get from these posts is what really depresses me. You know, the internet is a powerful tool for organizing and is for raising money. By the way, if you feel free to drop a couple of bucks in the tip jar, please do. And to my subscribers, I apologize for not having done a show for a while. and I'll talk about that in a little bit. But it, the unfortunate truth is that it's also amplified the nature of progressive politics. We still find up falling into these little cliques and arguing among ourselves. Some people took my post, were more offended by the, were more fired up by the idea that I was, attacking Marcos of Daily Kos than they were in seeing what I'm trying to talk about. Because, you know, obviously, the political reputation of Marcos is far more important than the issue of election reform to these people, right? You know, there's all too many people out there in the blogosphere who are concerned, more concerned with their own sense of self-importance than they are with fixing the serious problems we have. And there are all too many members of the Democratic leadership who are more concerned with their standing than they are with the well-being of their constituents in their country. Howard Dean used to talk about that. Well, he still talks about that, about how they're complacent. They're satisfied with second place. They know their place, and that's it. And that's just wrong. This issue is too big for any of that. And it's time we started facing up to it. You don't have to like me. I don't have to like you. But we better recognize the nature of the threat that we face. And Paul Krugman talked about that in his latest column. He said, our current political leaders would suffer greatly if either House of Congress changed hands in 2006 or if the presidency changed hands in 2008. The lids would come off all the simmering scandals from the selling of the Iraq war to profiteering by politically connected companies. The Republicans will be strongly tempted to make sure they win these elections by any means necessary. And everything we've seen suggests that they will be that they will give in to that temptation. Of course, Mr. Krugman is being polite. And saying the Republicans would be tempted to rig the election in 06 is like saying a junkie would be tempted to shoot up if they saw some stash just lying around. Face it, they've been getting away with it for the last 5 years. Why would they stop now? They have no reason to. And I'm going to continue to guarantee and put my prediction that the 2006 elections will change absolutely nothing. The Republicans will remain in control of Congress. I guarantee it. I guarantee it 100%. You might see a couple of seats change, but you're not going to see a big 30 to 40 seat turnaround like they showed in 94 when the Republicans took over. That's not going to happen. The Republicans are simply not going to allow that to happen. You know, when Bush stepped into the White House, he and his administration were already talking about ways of removing Hussein from power. Who was that guy? I forget his name. The guy who wrote the book. It was in his book that he talked about that. And there are other sources, too. When 9/11 came along, and I'm not going to discuss that in detail, but let's just say when 9/11 came along, the temptation to use the political power they got from that was there. And they jumped on it. Now think about this. They willingly and happily started a war that killed tens of thousands, maybe 100,000 innocent people. The moment the opportunity presented itself, as soon as it was there, they grabbed it. Now, if they were willing to do that, and for the most part, we know they were, and they're willing to lie about it, and they're willing to shame even military veterans who talk out against it, why then should we think that they wouldn't bother to rig an election? And if they're capable of killing thousands of Iraqis, they're perfectly capable of doing the same to us if the opportunity presents itself. Does that prospect frighten you? It should. Because I don't want to see Marcos and Atrios wind up being the most important prisoners in the concentration camp. Remember this. To the Bush administration, to the Republican leadership, for their financial backers, we don't even count as human beings. Their cavalier attitude towards the deaths of innocents in Iraq and the soldiers they sent to kill them is absolute proof of that. They must be stopped. They must be held accountable for their actions, and they must be prevented from rising again as a political force. And I, for one, would gladly sacrifice the political career and reputation of any blogger, any activist, or any politician in order to accomplish those goals. And so should we all. The sacrifices that were made by people in the past and the lives of the generations to come demand no less of us than that. Let's take a little break. We'll be back with some more on the Cup of Joe radio show. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more on the Cup of Joe radio show.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Every once in a while, we like to honor minor stage players in the tragic farce of the Grand Hypocrisy Party. That is why this week we are honoring former GOP Oklahoma City Mayor Kirk Humphries. You see, Humphries helped get one Charles Alfred Drayling Jr. out on bail after he was caught trying to board an airplane with a bomb. So, for Republicans, if you're non-white and named Muhammad and you try to board an airplane with a bomb, you get rendered to Egypt or Syria where you summarily get tortured, right? But apparently, if you come from red state Republican land, you are, according to Humphries, absolved of any wrongdoing. He had a little explosive device, Humphries said of Drayling. And boys like to see things go bang. I have every confidence that they'll find out Charlie Drayling is a fine young man and no terrorist. Really? According to the bomb maker's affidavit, Drayling said he learned as a teenager how to build homemade explosives from websites like the Anarchist Cookbook. Drayling said he has built and detonated several explosive devices for recreational purposes. So, now, thanks to the intervention of Oklahoma bigwig Republican Humphries, Drayling is back out on the streets, once again making bombs just for the fun of it. Maybe BuzzFlash is mistaken, but wasn't Oklahoma City the place the federal building was blown up by a white guy named Timothy McVeigh and scores of people, including children, were murdered? Nah, must be our imagination. After all, Humphries was mayor of Oklahoma City. Surely he must know that white guys blow up people too, wouldn't he? But such an admission would make him a hypocrite, right? That's why Kirk Humphries is the BuzzFlash GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Because, like his leader, Mr. Bush, he puts Republican friendships first, and the security of Americans a distant fifth. Until next week, remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites. Ooh, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. That's V like in victory, folks. And again, I want to welcome everybody listening in on Rant Radio, and I'm doing this through an iPod cast, so I hope it works out all right. Let me know, somebody. If you're not hearing this, tell me. Does that make any sense? If you're not hearing this, tell me. And also, of course, everyone listening in White Rose Society and at WNYmedia.net. Now, if you're a regular reader of my blog and regular listener of my show, you know that there's a reason. Well, several reasons that I rarely venture into the specific going-ons of the political scene. I mean, even if I weren't tied up with personal issues, I wouldn't have been saying a whole much about the Valerie Plame, Karl Rove thing or the Cindy Sheehan thing. Or what happened with Bob Novak on Crossfire or whatever, Inside Politics, whoever, or any of the numerous scandals and other events that are going on. One reason, of course, is that so many other bloggers do a much better job of it than I do, and I don't see any point in duplicating their efforts, and nor do I have the time to delve into these things in detail anyway. I mean, that's just the plain truth of it. It takes time to go through all this stuff, you know, and it's time I don't always have. But at any rate, the big reason that I don't get involved, the big reason, is because, as I see it, so much of it is a given anyway. I mean, when I hear people talk about the things Bush does or the things Rove does or how idiotic the press is, my attitude is always, what, this surprises you? You're surprised by this? What, are you crazy? Isn't that the worst accident ever? I mean, it's not like these guys ever had a stellar reputation to begin with outside their own cult following. I just don't see any need to labor the point, to belabor the point that the Bush administration, the leadership of the Republican Party and their financial backers are the biggest threat to global peace since the rise of fascism 80 or so years ago. I mean, despite all their rhetoric, there's really nothing bold or new about what they're doing. Just the same tired old story we've seen since the dawn of human and civilization. just another excuse for some people to kill others to get something they want. And that's really all it boils down to. They want money. They want power. The Iraqi people are in the way. Let's just take it. You know, we do what we can because we've got the military might. Certainly, if the United Nations had any real power to stop us, they would have at least tried. And, of course, they didn't. Excuse me. Now, I want to clarify that this doesn't mean to say that we shouldn't focus on these individual issues. I mean, taken as a whole, they provide a foundation for doing what eventually needs to be done, and that is removing these assorted neocons, religious fundamentalists, and corporatists from power, holding them responsible for their actions, and then going around and going out and building a world where their kind will find it increasingly difficult, if not impossible, to regain power ever again. I'm not saying we should kill them. I'm not saying that they don't have a right to speak their views. What I'm saying is that we should prevent them from ruling over our lives, which is what they want to do, to their benefit, not ours. You know, if what they were doing was beneficial to everybody, and it was tried, you know, 100 or so years ago in the Gilded Age, if what they did was so beneficial to begin with, liberalism would never have come into play. Neither would communism or any of the other other isms that have acted as a reaction to these policies. None of that. If it worked, then we'd have stuck with it. There was a reason why all this stuff happened. You know, and we're going to discover, what we're going to discover is that doing that part, getting these people out of power, that's the easy part. What comes after is what's hard. Building something new is hard. Winning the battle is less important than winning the war. And winning the battle is easier than winning the war. Because they've won all the battles, but I don't believe they still won the war yet. And I don't think they ever will win the war, because you know what? In the long run, the war isn't good for anybody but a few people. And there's only so much you can continue to manipulate people. Now, you know, those of you who are regulars, you understand that I am somewhat of a student of history. I'm not claiming to be an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I do know something about it. The American Revolution was founded on a very simple premise, that the government exists to serve the needs of those governed, not the other way around. Now, at the time, it was a radical idea. That was back when kings and queens were still ruling things. Now, the liberal progressive view of this took that a step further, that the government has not only the responsibility, but the duty to look after the least protected of its citizens. I mean, political freedom doesn't mean a whole hell of a lot if you're working 12 hours a day, 6 days a week in a sweatshop. Having the right to vote doesn't really mean a whole lot. You're not really being representative, and you're not really able to pursue happiness, which is one of the three basic guarantees: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You don't live very long. You don't have a whole lot of liberty, and you certainly can't pursue happiness when you're working so much and not getting anything for what you earn, not getting enough. And the idea of the New Dealers, that, you know, the government has a duty to do something about that, that too was a radical idea. And both of these political revolutions changed the established order, challenged the established order, and presented a truly bold new way of seeing the world. Each was a step forward that ushered in a new level of achievement for the human race. It wasn't perfect. I'm not saying it was perfect by any stretch of the imagination. There was still a lot of racism. There was still a lot of discrimination. There was still a lot of sexism. There was still a lot of corporate run. I mean, I remember the story about Mr. Tucker and his new car, where he was taken out by the other car companies who used their political connections to take him down. They weren't interested in competition. They were interested in protecting their asses. And they wound up later on using some of the same innovations that he created. To me, that's an example of how bad things could get. But we have to fix those mistakes And we have to build that on that foundation and take it to the next level. As our founding fathers and the New Dealers did before us, we need to start thinking just as boldly. Look, people, I got news for you. A global order is coming and parts of it are here already. What form that global order will eventually take is still uncertain. It may become, as it's progressing now, a corporatist state run by people whose only interest is in increasing their own wealth and power, and where corporate or economic rights are valued greater than human rights. It may also become a world ruled by a government which is more interested in maintaining its power than it is in protecting the rights and freedoms of its citizens, and stifling any innovation that threatens it. Either of these, or any combination thereof, are distinct possibilities, and neither of them are going to benefit anyone but a few people. There is an alternative. It could be a world where happiness and success are not determined by how much money you have or by how many people you have power over. And that's the world I'm sure most of us would prefer to live in. But in order to get there, we have to start thinking in bigger terms and in ways we haven't thought about before. Now, we still have to take those small steps that we need to get there, but it takes a great leap of thinking just to begin that process. The New World Order the neocons and assorted fundamentalists are trying to build just won't last. It never does. Their thoughts are only for themselves and they're for the immediate future. They're not concerned with anything beyond their own families and lifetimes. We should think in terms of a greater human community for centuries to come. When their world falls, as it will, we have to be ready to fill that gap. It's time we start to look past the idea of nations and started looking at the Earth as a whole, its ecology, and how we can best balance human needs and the planet's health. It's time we started to discard the relics of culture that have held us back for millennia. Racism, sexism, ethnic hatred, religious fundamentalism, these have no place in this new world. We must not only reject them for ourselves, we must also reject others who embrace them, even when it suits our own interests to do so. Excuse me. man. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, it's been a while since I've done this. I mean, we've done this all too often. And we're doing it now. You know, where we're embracing dictators in places like Uzbekistan, which were just as bad, if not worse, than Saddam Hussein, because they're on our side. They may be a bastard, in other words, but they're our bastard. That's just wrong. And it's wrong regardless of who does it, whether you're talking about a Democrat or Republican. We have to throw out the idea that one nation, one culture, or one religion is superior to any other and recognize that we are one community of humans working together. I also think it's time we started to rethink the entire idea of money, maybe in terms of an economy where money as we know it doesn't even exist. Money is an illusion. Money is only real if you believe in it. In theory, it's supposed to represent a person's contribution to society as a whole, but I think reality has proven this to be utterly false. The hardest working among us are usually the least compensated. This has been true for 10,000 years. It won't stop unless we start thinking of the economy in completely different ways. And we have to do it without suppressing the innovative spirit that gives us our greatest technological advantage. We have to do it and still make sure that the necessary work that needs to get done still gets done. Who's going to sweep the streets? That's the question I always ask. Because those things still need to be done regardless of whether someone gets paid for it or not. We need to reaffirm our commitment to science. Because as the guardians of our world, whether you look at that in religious terms or not, we can best serve the world by understanding how it works. But we've got to balance that with the thought of something greater and understanding that science is only part of life. And that the quest for life meaning goes beyond chemistry or biology or computers. Life's value can't be measured by a yardstick, nor can it be found in the rituals of organized religion. Those of faith must recognize that the Word of God exists in many places, not just in books, but in the very structure of the universe, in the atomic structure that binds us together, in every leaf of every tree, in every blade of grass, in every DNA strand, in every cell in our body. That is the Word of God. And there's more, of course. What I'm talking about just barely scratches the surface. And with all the bold ideas, the greatest idea is, the greatest fear is the fear of the unknown. But I believe in what FDR told us, that all we have to fear is fear itself. And I didn't understand what he meant for the longest time when I was younger, because you think about those words and you're too young to understand that. But when I started to become politically aware, I realized what he was talking about. And when I became knowledgeable about the history of the times, and the fear that he was talking about was the fear of government getting involved in the economy, which is what was being spread around by the people who were benefiting most. And I guarantee you, at the time of 1932, it certainly wasn't the working people. But if we conquer that fear, we'll have won much of the battle already. And really, finally, we've got to accomplish this without bloodshed. Self-defense is the only excuse for using any kind of physical force, period. A society built on blood can't last. That's why I look at American culture right now, and I believe very strongly that it simply won't last. Not as it is today. As much as I love my country, it's never lived up to the ideals that we've put out. We don't believe in freedom for everybody. We believe in freedom for some. But we pretend to believe in freedom for everybody. And we believe that part of that freedom believes is the freedom to suppress people. And that's just wrong. All too few of us understand the enormous undertaking this is and how long it'll take to accomplish, if we can. Because a great deal of what needs to be done means that we need to try and change human nature itself, the seemingly immovable object we have to hurl ourselves at. We didn't start this, and we won't finish it. It's been going on for millennia before us, and it'll be played out long after all of us have passed on. The demons of our past are always going to be with us, and we are still prisoners of our history, our culture, and our genes. But those bars can be broken if we work together to do it. It'll be our most difficult task, but if we succeed, it'll open a new door in our history, leading us to new challenges in a brave new world. Let's take another quick break, and I'll be back with more on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Sam, play us out.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show will be right back.
Dead green, dead eyes, telling them big lies, hoping that the world buys what they sell. Right-wing think tank, radio hate think, making that big bank and raising hell. Treat you like a nitwit, better get over it. They're stupid and proud of it, cause they don't care. Rights on a rollback, country on the wrong track. You know they got theirs, Jack, and they won't share. They all talk about freedom, but treat it like it's so obscene. They're working hard to keep you distracted. When all else fails, they crank up the fear machine.
Our government has credible evidence. They are a piece of terrorism. Terrorists in the information age.
Yeah, when all else fails, they crank up the fear machine.
Our government has credible evidence.
Foreign terrorists found within our borders.
Terrorism, 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 terrorism.
But the outlook is very, very grim.
China's in the basement, shredding all the documents. Someday soon you're gonna wonder where your rights went. Don't ask, don't know, do it cause we say so. One bad word and we'll ship you off to Gitmo. Might be a terrorist, put you on the blacklist. Friendly little arm twist, that's okay. Their law, their rules, acting like it's high school. Play it for the same fool every day. They all talk about freedom, but treat it like it's so obscene. They're working hard to keep you distracted. When all else fails, they crank up the fear machine.
Our government has credible evidence.
They are a piece of terrorism.
Terrorists in the information age.
Yeah, when all else fails, they crank up the fear machine.
Our government has credible evidence.
Foreign terrorists found within our borders.
Terrorism, 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 terrorism.
But the outlook is very, very grim.
And so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
up, stand straight, shout out, demonstrate. Hope we're not too late to turn around. Rise up, fight back, never cut a nose slack. The only way to take it back is vote on down. We're right there, all better when they're all gone. Wanna fight, bring it on, cause we ain't scared. Think you got the fight, run, sorry, but you're wrong, son. Better watch your back, cause we're everywhere. They all talk about freedom, but treat it like it's so safe. They're working hard to keep you distracted. When all else fails, they crank up the fear machine.
Our government has credible evidence.
They are a piece of terrorism.
Terrorists in the information age.
Yeah, when all else fails, they crank up the fear machine.
Our government has credible evidence.
Foreign terrorists found within our borders.
They crank up the fear machine.
Our government has credible evidence.
They are a piece of terrorism.
Terrorists in the information age.
Yeah, when all else fails, they crank up the fear machine.
Our government has credible evidence.
Foreign terrorists found within our borders.
Terrorism, 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 terrorism.
But the outlook is very, very grim.
Pretty grim indeed. American Stranger and the gang at TakeBackTheMedia.com with the Fear Machine. And I haven't been playing any music for a long time. I figured I'd throw that one in there. I've had it in the archives for a while, and I haven't made use of it. But there's another song I got coming up made by my friend Tom at the Funny Farm. And as soon as we get that a little cleaned up, musically speaking, I'm going to get that on the air for everybody. How is everybody doing? This is Joe Vecchio with a Cup of Joe radio show, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And again, let me thank everybody listening in at White Rose, everyone at Rant Radio, and everyone at WNYMedia.net. What WNY Media out of upstate New York, out of Buffalo, I believe, in that general area. You know, I spent some time up in Buffalo when I was with the Fresh Air Fund back when I was a kid, and I made a total ass of myself, as I am still doing in different ways, shapes, or form. I was a very, very bratty kid. Ask any of my relatives who had to grow up with me. Ask my Aunt Teresa when I put a snake in her thermos. She hated snakes. Never saw a woman jump so much in all your life. Oh, God, I was a jerk as a kid. The big story that's been going on, or one of the really big stories, has been the Cindy Sheehan story. Now, Cindy is the mother of Casey Sheehan, who was one of our brave soldiers who died in Iraq. And she's been sitting for those of you who have been living under a rock for the last few weeks, she has been sitting out in Crawford while Mr. Bush is on one of his lengthy vacations and just wants a simple question from Mr. Bush, which is, why did my son die? What noble purpose brought my son to Iraq? And, of course, Mr. Bush simply refuses to answer. And politically speaking, or at least from a strategic point of view, ignoring her is the best way to handle it. If you can't handle something, ignore it. That is the politically expedient method of dealing with a situation like that. And, of course, since Ms. Sheehan's mother had a stroke, she had to go and be with her and take care of her, which means that the people who have gathered around her don't have her voice with them anymore. We'll see. Digby at Hullabaloo seems to think that when she left, it was all over. We'll see. We'll see. At any rate, she is without meaning to, given a huge voice to those people who are really starting to wonder now what the hell is going on. And she had a diary on Daily Kos, and you can go there. It's in there. It's titled Hypocrites and Liars, and talking about what was going on. And one of the things she had – this is very interesting – one of the things she had to say is this. She said, I just read an article posted today on lourockwell.com by artist Robert Shetterly, who painted my portrait. The article reminded me of something I said at the Veterans for Peace Conference the night before I set out to Bush's ranch and my probably futile quest for the truth. This is what I said. I got an email the other day, and it said, Cindy, if you didn't use so much profanity, there's people on the fence that get offended. And you know what I said? I said, you know what? You know what, goddammit? How in the world is anybody still sitting on the fence? If you fall on the side that is pro-George and pro-war, you get your ass over to Iraq and take the place of somebody who wants to come home. And if you fall on the side that is against this war and against George Bush, stand up and speak out. And that's what Cindy Sheehan had to say, and she's absolutely fucking right. And I've said this time and time again. If you are a supporter of Mr. Bush's policies, and if you support this war, get your ass over to Iraq. Sign up. You fucking college Republicans and you fucking young Republicans. You know, Michelle Malkin, you know, who sits there and says that it's perfectly all right for us to throw anybody who looks like a Muslim into an internment camp. She's 35 years old. She's perfectly within the age group to sign up for the military. Why doesn't she show up? I'll tell you why she doesn't show up. The same reason all the rest of them don't show up. They're cowards. They're fucking cowards. You believe that strongly in it, you go out there and fight for it. I don't necessarily want you to die, but at least have the courage of your convictions. By sitting this war out, by making feeble excuses like, oh, I'm supporting the war in other ways, that's horseshit. That's horseshit. You're throwing out all this patriotism. You go out there and fucking do the work. You do what needs to be done. If you believe terrorism is the enemy, I am not your enemy. Atrios and Kos are not your enemies. Avedon Carroll at the sideshow is not your enemy. Digby at Digsby's blog is not your enemy. If you believe that the terrorists and Al-Qaeda are your enemy, then you sign up and you put a rifle in your hand and you guard the walls. Remember the movie? Oh, what the hell is it? The You Can't Handle the Truth movie with Jack Nicholson. A Few Good Men. Jack Nicholson and Tom Cruise. Which would have been a better movie, by the way, diverting from the subject, if they hadn't shown the scene where Nicholson, the colonel of the Guantanamo Bay facility, if they hadn't shown the scene where he did give the order to do the code red on the guy. For those of you who haven't seen it, I'm not going to get too detailed on that. But, it, you know, the speech that Nicholson gave at the end of that, you know, the truths that are too hard for you to face, if you can't, the truths that you can't deal with at your cocktail parties, you provide, or all of the stuff that you talk about goes on behind the wall of protection that I help provide. And if you want to be part of that, then you grab it. And if you don't like what I do, then you grab a gun and you stand watch. And that's how I feel about these young Republicans. If you believe in this, if you think it's right, then you grab a gun and you stand watch. You do what needs to be done. I still think you're an idiot for risking your life on a lie, because it's still a lie, regardless of whether you support it or not. It's still a lie. But at least I can say, hey, you've got the courage of your convictions. You stand up for what you believe in. It actually makes you a deadlier enemy. What sitting back and making excuses for yourself does makes you a coward. You know, I didn't grow up in World War II. But my dad did, and a lot of my relatives did, and they talked about those days. And I know for a fact, because it's been reported in other sources too, that any male who was young and healthy looking in the States and was not seen in uniform was verbally attacked and sometimes was physically attacked. And anybody who would dare to speak out against a soldier was verbally attacked and physically attacked. And the right wing, as I've said before, the Republicans, they hate soldiers. You know, they were spitting on Casey Sheehan, Cindy Sheehan's son, saying that he was incompetent. If he was a good soldier, he wouldn't have been killed, which is horseshit, which is such absolute horseshit you can't even imagine. And it can only come from the mouths of people who have never, ever had to put their lives on the line. You know, I'm a veteran. I don't claim to be a great combat person. I was in a combat unit, and I'll be honest, if we ever got to the point where someone like me in the military had to grab a rifle and stand guard, it means we're in pretty dire fucking straits, because I'm not, if you've ever seen me, you know I'm not the most physical guy in the world. I'm a little 5'2". Right now I weigh 200. Back then I weighed about 150. Hang on a second. Now my point is, by joining the service, even though I wasn't in a combat role, I sacrificed my time, And I risked my life in the service of my country. Part of it was economic, but also part of it was patriotic. Like many people in the 80s, I joined the service because it was the only way I could get the training or the college and stuff that I needed to get. And I didn't even take advantage of it while I was there. So my screw-ups are my screw-ups. But my point is, I put my life on the line. If you believe in what's going on, then you put your life on the line. Otherwise, you got no right to criticize anybody for being anti-war. You got no right to do that. And you're a bunch of fucking cowards. That's all you are. And you're a bunch of traitors. And you should be called out on it every single day. How you people sleep at night is beyond me. Saying what you say. With a fucking Rush Limbaugh and his philandrial cyst, whatever the fuck that is, that got his ass out of war. And Pat Robertson's daddy got him out of the war in Korea. They never fight. They never put their lives on the line because they don't believe it. John fucking Wayne fought in a million wars in the movie, but you know what? He never saw one in real life. That's my message to you. Go out there and fight. If you really believe in it, you go out there and you do what you think is right. Stop trashing Cindy Sheehan. As a mother, she made the biggest sacrifice a mother can make. She lost her son. What sacrifices have you made? To pony up a few bucks to the Republican Party? Is that your idea of a sacrifice? You have no fucking clue. You have no fucking clue, and you're just a bunch of fucking cowards. And if you don't like my profanity, fuck you. If you believe in a judgment after death, you'll see one. You'll see one. You can fool yourself. You can fool me. You can lie to yourself. You can lie to me. But if you believe that there is a judgment and that the person who's judging you knows everything, guess what? You can't lie to them because they know. So you think about that. Cowardly sacks of garbage. You lowly pieces of shit. You worthless scum. You pathetic excuses for human beings. You believe in it? You're of age, you go fight. You pick up a rifle and you go fight. And on those pleasant notes, I'm going to head on out because I see by the clock on the wall at Fabulous Studio Isle that time is running out. I want to thank, by the way, the people who helped me get my computer back up and running when it was screwed up. You know who you are. I don't want to say names on the air, but you know who you are. And I want to thank everybody who is my subscribers and apologize to them for not putting up a show sooner. I do the best I can, and I apologize. If it was a regular steady job where I was earning money for it, it would be a different story. But with my wife's situation and all that. Anyway, that's it for me this week. Talk to you next time. Bye.
I want a cup of Joe. I crave a plate of Dave. Oh, in a jar of John. Don't put anything on. I'll chug a jug of George. I'll sip a mug of Doug with the creamer of Steve. How many more does that leave? You'd be a pot of Scott. Heat up a pan of Stan. Throw in a handful of Dick. Sam, but don't give me no mo, 'cause what I really want's a cup of Joe.
The Cup of Joe radio show has been recorded live at the Fabulous Studio Al in Decatur, Georgia, and has been produced by Jove Enterprises, Incorporated. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe radio show, is a production of Mr. and Mrs. Vecchio of Brooklyn, New York.
A plate of Dave, creamer of Steve, a mug of Doug, a cup of...